Welcome to Murder with the Misses. I'm Darren.
And I'm Amy. And today we're going to tell you about Robert Wan.
But first, make sure you go on to Spotify and like, share, and subscribe. And go check us out on YouTube, Podbean, and many more platforms.
Yes. Now, with 79 minutes and friends like these, you never know what could happen. And we still don't. If you haven't heard this case before, hold on to your biscuits. And I apologize in advance. This is another frustrating case where you get your hopes up, but are left with more questions than answers. There are so many unanswered questions, twists, turns. And when you finally think you're getting somewhere, think again. And this is also a two-parter. So I want you guys to make sure you check out that second part. 32-year-old lawyer Robert lived in Oakton, Virginia, but he worked in Washington, D.C. at Radio Free Asia. Robert was fun, easy to talk to, and went to Catholic school. He was even a member of the 13 Club, which is said to do random acts of kindness for people. He goes on to the College of William and Mary, and as a freshman became friends with a senior, Joe Price. Joe goes on to be a lawyer at Errant Fox and is involved in Equality Virginia. He started dating Victor Zaborski, who was the marketing manager for the Got Milk campaign, so he was pretty successful himself.
They were featured in USA Today when Joe donated sperm to a lesbian couple so they could have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
They got milk? I'm sorry.
No. Oh, my God.
Sorry.
This is too much.
My bad.
They were seen locally as kind of leaders at the time for the gay community in D.C. In 2003, they became a throuple by adding Dylan Ward to the relationship. He didn't really have any roots anywhere and worked doing everything from being a massage therapist to writing children's books. But they weren't the only ones finding love. Robert met Kathy in 2002 and immediately tells friends that he had met the woman he was going to marry. He didn't date a lot, so this took his friends by surprise, but Robert and Kathy married in 2003. Joe and Victor attended the ceremony. Now, Joe and Victor ended up living in D.C., and they loved to host parties and brunches. So in 2004, they throw Robert a surprise 30th birthday party at their place. Dylan was involved at this point, so everyone was there and had a good time. The throuple would end up buying a $1.2 million three-story townhouse and rent out the basement since they had plenty of room. So when Robert was expecting to work late on August 2nd, 2006, because of a conference, he asked Joe if he could crash at their house that night. Of course, Joe said yes. Now, this stood out to me because I Googled the two locations, and it's like a 30-minute drive home. But he said that he would have arrived late, so you get off the conference late, and then you have the commute home for 30 minutes, and it would cut into his sleeping time, and he was worried about waking up Kathy. Since Joe had a spare bedroom on the second floor, it was not a problem. Dylan also had a room on the second floor, while Joe and Victor shared the master bedroom on the third floor. The first floor was common areas like living room and kitchen. So now we'll break down the timeline. At 9:30 p.m., Robert called Kathy from his BlackBerry, saying that he had just left the conference and was heading back to the office to meet the night crew, but he wanted to be able to tell her goodnight before she went to bed. At 10:24 p.m., Robert calls Joe from his work desk, likely to let him know that he was about to head that way. At around 10:30 to 10:32, so that's only a two-minute difference, Robert arrived at the townhouse. Victor is upstairs in his room watching Project Runway, but Joe and Dylan are on the first floor. They get Robert a glass of water, and the three chat a little bit in the kitchen. At about 10:45, Joe takes Robert to the guest room where he will be sleeping, and Dylan goes to his bedroom. Robert gets ready for a shower, and Joe heads upstairs, takes a sleeping pill, reads for about 5 minutes, and then falls asleep. As he's drifting off, he said he could hear the shower running downstairs.
At 11:05 and 11:07, Robert's work BlackBerry drafted two emails, one to Kathy saying he just took a shower and was going to bed, and one was a work email to confirm a work lunch the next day.
Right, and these were just drafts. Neither were actually sent. As a side note here, police did return that phone, that BlackBerry, to Robert's company before they checked it for things like fingerprints and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the company wiped it before the cops could come back and look at it and make sure that those emails weren't drafted by someone else or that there was anything that could be discovered on the phone besides this. Sometime between 11 and 11:35 p.m., Joe and Victor are woken up by a door chime, which is on their back door. They go down to investigate, and on the second floor, they see Robert lying on his bed, covered in blood, and Victor screams. At 11:49, Victor calls 911. He says, "We think there's an intruder and a house guest has been stabbed." The 911 operator tells him that they need to use a towel or a rag to apply pressure and try to stop the bleeding. He says that Joe is doing that. He says that the intruder had one of their knives from the house. Operator asked if the intruder ran out the door with one of their knives, and he said, "I think so." Victor also asked the operator what time it was, and she said it was 11:54 by this time. And this is the time that the EMTs arrive. And we're not going to play the 911 call in this one because it's about 7 minutes long, but it's one that you can hear online. So you can literally just Google it and it'll pop right up and you can listen to the whole thing. Now, EMTs say that when they got there, Victor is standing on the front steps, still on the phone with 911, and he's wearing a white bathrobe. He tells them, "Stabbing on the second floor." There are 16 steps on the staircase between the first floor and second floor, and they said about 3/4 of the way up, they see Dylan, also in a white bathrobe. So they ask him what's going on, and he just walked into his room and shut the door, never saying a word. They go into Robert's room and see that he is laying on the bed. The comforter and top sheet have been pulled back diagonally, like it would if one person was going to get in bed. And they said it was at about a 45-degree angle. But Robert was laying on top of them. Head was on the pillow, so there's a perfect indention of a head on the pillow. And he's wearing a gray William & Mary t-shirt and shorts. His day clothes are folded neatly on a nearby chair. Joe is sitting on the bed, wearing only his underwear. They ask him what's going on, and he gets up to get out of their way, only saying that he heard a scream.
Robert has 3 stab wounds on his chest and stomach, but there are no signs of life. There is also not a lot of blood.
Yeah, so he's got 3 stab wounds. As they're looking at him, they barely see blood on the bed.
Was this the one where you showed me like the picture of the towel and there was hardly any blood on the towel?
Yep.
Yeah, it was kind of weird.
EMTs say that it looked like his body had been showered, redressed, and put on the bed. They said that all 3 of the other men in the house also looked freshly showered. In fact, when they passed Dylan on the staircase, he had been coming out of the bathroom, and they believe he had just taken a shower at that time. Also, all men were calm. On the nightstand, next to Robert's pull-out bed, was his wallet with cash in it, his BlackBerry, watch, night guard case, and a bloody kitchen knife. There was a white towel on the floor. This was apparently the towel that Joe was using to try to stop the bleeding. Nothing else was out of place in, like, the entire house. There's no sign of a struggle anywhere. Nothing. EMTs take Robert's body and work on him in the ambulance on the way to the hospital, but he is pronounced dead at 12:25 a.m. on August 3rd. Police are on the scene, and now all 3 men are in white bathrobes at this time, looking like a little cult. They have them get dressed and come down to the station. Investigators start working on the crime scene. Joe called Kathy just after midnight, saying to get to the hospital because Robert has been stabbed. Police put all 3 men in separate interrogation rooms and start getting their stories. Police are asking questions like, why would Robert stay at the house with homosexuals? In Joe's interrogation tape, the cop says, "I've got 3 homosexuals in a house and 1 straight guy. What's he doing there? I think we're all drinking wine. You know what's going to happen tonight? You're coming to Jesus tonight." Joe just responded, "That's fascinating and insulting and offensive in every imaginable way."
So homosexual people can't be friends with straight people?
Apparently not without some kind of sinister reason, according to the cops. Yeah. And the lead investigator says that this was a tactic to get the men riled up in the hopes that they would slip up. Regardless of what it was, it looked very homophobic. Why not just stick with the facts that 4 people are in a house and 1 gets stabbed to death? That's suspicious enough. But this tactic got what is now known as the LGBTQ community riled up, and they were backing the 3 men. But back to the interrogations. We've already told the timeline, and the men are sticking to this. They all say that the intruder had to have come in the back door since they know for sure the front door was locked, and they heard the chime from the back door. Joe said that when he found Robert, the knife was laying on his chest, so he took it and put it on the nightstand so he could assess the situation. He chooses to leave because, remember, he's a lawyer. So he's given his statement and he's not going to sit there for an interrogation. So since he's not under arrest, they have to let him go. But Joe didn't quite leave yet. And the lead investigator came into the station and Joe came a knocking. He sits down with the investigator and says that he said the knife was laying on Robert's chest, but he actually had pulled the knife out of his chest. Keep in mind, this man is a lawyer, like I just mentioned, and he knows changing his story is not a good look. And it made the investigator take notice. And this can't be blamed on him remembering incorrectly because he was in hysterics. Because remember, they were all very calm. And they still were, even in interrogation. None of them were acting like a friend had just been stabbed to death by a stranger who came into their house in the middle of the night. But police did zero in on Dylan. He was staying on the same floor as Robert. He also has no alibi. So Joe and Victor are each other's because they share a bed. But Dylan has his own room on another floor. So they take him straight from the homicide office to the FBI office for a polygraph test. They asked him two questions. Did you kill Robert? And do you know who killed Robert? He said no to both, and he showed deception on both.
I think everyone is well aware of how we feel about polygraph tests here.
Yes, very true.
You can't use them in court.
No.
Even if he fails or whatever. I mean, I understand that they're just trying to get some kind of reaction or
I think it's leverage.
Just to see if they can get a rise out of them, basically. Right. But they're not usable in court.
They're stress tests.
That's all they are.
And this is a stressful situation, so.
I mean, we've seen some cases where the guy was completely lying and answered the question and passed.
Yep. Yeah.
It's just like you said, it's a stress test. It's all in how
you are reacting to the
situation. You're reacting to the question. That's all it is.
100%. Yep. We don't like them. And since they had no evidence, really, there's nothing they can really hold them on or use to charge them with, all three are let go. And police talked to Kathy and told her about their suspicions of the three men. And Joe called when they left, wanting to know what they had said. Then the three men came to Kathy's house and had a private meeting in the basement with her. After this meeting, everybody said Kathy was on their side. Joe was even a pallbearer at Robert's funeral. And it said that he got just as many condolences as Kathy did that day. Like, they literally had two receiving lines, one for Kathy and one for Joe. But let's talk about the body, the crime scene, the autopsy. At the scene, the bed that Robert was laying on had two spots of blood. To me, they look about the size of a softball, maybe a little bigger. It looks like where blood would have slid over the shoulder, so it's partially on the pillow and partially on the bed. And then one was down his side, so like blood had went down his side and made a little pool. But nowhere near the amount of blood you would expect from someone who had been stabbed three times. And the white towel used to stop the bleeding had so little blood on it, like Darren was saying. Literally two small spots and one large spot, but still nowhere near the amount you would expect. The knife on the nightstand had a 5.5-inch blade, but it looked wiped. There was blood on it, but it didn't look right. The interesting find for police was actually in Dylan's room. Holy cow. They found an entire sex shop in there. Lots of sexual aids. And not just some of the more mainstream stuff, more of the hardcore stuff. BDSM, bondage, pain-inducing stuff. They had the Emmy do a rape kit during autopsy. They looked at the computers and found thousands of pornographic images from online and of the three men themselves. Turns out that although Joe was a domineering person to the outside world, in the bedroom, he was a sub, and Dylan was his dom. And like I said, they liked the painful stuff. There were websites showing that the two, I'm talking Dylan and Joe, and it was Joe in particular, was looking for a third for them, since apparently Victor wasn't too big on that side of things.
The autopsy came in showing that there were three stab wounds, one in the heart, one in his right lung, and one to his stomach. Mm-hmm. But did it show anything on the rape kit?
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Okay.
Yeah. So all these wounds were 4 to 5 inches deep, and they were very uniform, too precise to have been done in a frenzy or hurry or any type of struggle. There were also needle puncture marks to the left side of his neck, right ankle, chest, hand, and the left arm. EMTs were asked if these were possibly from them working to revive him, but they all said no. That was way too many sticks for what they would have done. And none of them could explain why he had all of them. He also had small petechial hemorrhages on his eyelids, so that showed some slight oxygen deprivation from strangulation or maybe something over his face. Not enough to kill him, since they list the cause of death as the stab wounds. The big thing to me was he only had 1/3 of the amount of blood in his body that he should have had. Now, the amount of blood at the scene did not add up to the missing 2/3. So where is the blood? Semen was found around the genitalia and inside the rectal cavity. So here we go. DNA. Now we can get somewhere. Nope. It came back as Robert's own semen. And there was no sign of forcible sexual assault. They tested all of the toys in the house, but none of them had Robert's DNA on them. There were no defensive wounds, no sign of him being restrained in any way. So what would cause him to lay there and be stabbed to death? He already had his night guard in his mouth, which is what Kathy said is his last step in his bedtime routine. Could he be that hard of a sleeper that he never saw it coming? The next step is the toxicology report. Maybe they would find a sedative or a paralytic in his system that would have caused him to not be able to move or defend himself, but it was clean. The investigator and ME do say that there were some paralytics that break down in your system faster than you're able to test for them. They're gone before you even get the chance. So there's just more questions and less answers now that we have all the reports back. So there's your answer to the rape kit.
Yeah.
Well, kind of.
Some kind of an answer, huh?
Yes. Yes. Because there's a lot, as you can see, there's a lot that doesn't add up. And so it's literally a just question after question after question.
Yeah, no, there's a lot that don't add up on this one.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
So we broke this one down into two parts because if we put it all into one, we'd be here for a while.
Yeah, no, it'd be a lot longer.
Yes, and we try to keep it like in a commute time. So
yeah, we try to do all of our episodes to where, you know, you can like listen to it as you're on your way to work.
Lunch break,
whatever, you know, just try to keep them, you know, within the 30 minutes and stuff like that, just to, you know, give you something to listen to.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to entertain you a little bit.
So this is where we'll leave you for part one.
Yeah.
So make sure you check out part two when it drops. Spoiler alert, there is an indictment, but not for murder. To find out what happens there, come on back. If you have any information on this case, please call 202-727-9099.
Yeah, make sure you guys catch us up on Spotify. Make sure you hit the little bell. That way it notifies you when a new episode drops. Go check out our Facebook page and like, subscribe, share with your friends. I'll catch you guys on the next one.
Bye.